This is Contemporary Communications Conference. My name is Ned Potter. Today we welcome Walter Boart, the author of the best-selling book, Operation Mind Control. Hello, Walter.
Hi, Ned.
Your book, Operation Mind Control, published in paperback by Dell Publishers in 1978, is presently out of print, but is due for re-release soon. Operation Mind Control chronicles the research and development efforts by agencies of the U.S. intelligence community to control the perceptions and actions of individuals utilizing a wide variety of techniques, including drugs and drug-assisted interrogation, hypnosis, aversion therapy, electronic dissolution of memory, psychosurgery, bioelectronic implants, microwave transmissions, and numerous other methods of modifying or programming behavior. Your book was the result of a long and costly process of research involving technical assistance from over 45 professional people and the cooperative efforts of many private citizens working without major funding or corporate support, and spurred on by shock and outrage that citizens have been so victimized by their own government. As Richard Condon, author of The Manchurian Candidate, wrote in the foreword to your book, quote, "Please keep fearfully in mind that the astonishing information published in this seminal work of investigative reporting concerning avenues taken to decision and execution by our secret police to fracture or dissolve human minds was drawn directly from federal records and from official laboratory archives, as well as from the reviving memories of those who had already undergone the dehumanizing process." Welcome to L.A., Walter Boart. Thank you for being here. First, I would like to say that your book, Operation Mind Control, is one of the most important books published in the last 25 years, and I'm honored to be able to interview you concerning this subject.
Thanks.
You detailed in Chapter 1 your meetings with veterans who suffered from amnesia. Before these meetings, how did you first become interested in mind control?
Well, I ran into that fellow I identified in the book as David. I've known this guy since he was a little kid. We grew up together. He's a little younger than I. And we played together, and I knew him. And then he went off to Vietnam. He joined the Air Force. And he came back with amnesia and hyperamnesia, vastly improved short-term memory. And he was sitting in the chair in the living room. I didn't recognize him. He looked like, if you've seen the pictures of the repatriated POWs in Korea, they're stooped over and hunched shoulders. He looked like that. And, of course, he had a almost shaved head, military style, after 4 years. And he was gaunt and thin. He had this hollow stare in his eye. I didn't even recognize the guy. And then when I found out what had happened to him with his mother and family, and I interviewed his psychiatrist over a period of time, I got to know the story really well. And I found out that this guy had been programmed to carry secret messages locked behind post-hypnotic blocks, you know, a very sophisticated form of mind control, where he'd been put in front of a computer somehow, and there'd been this feedback with gibberish, and the coded information. So a guy would come up to him. One time he describes a story of going to a hotel room in Australia, and he thought he was on vacation. 5 days into the vacation, knock on the door, a man shows up, says something that contains the phrase, "Rose nose," triggers him, off goes the gibberish, which is 9 is 4, 43, you know, and out comes this coded information that he doesn't know what it meant, but he knew it verbatim. He also was a trained human tape recorder, video camera, if you will, sound and audio. And he would, today, I've talked to him, it's been now almost 20 years later, and I just recently called him, as I'm putting together the second edition, which is 2 volumes, and I'm working on the third. It's going to be 3 volumes, probably end up being 4-volume work before it's done. But there's so much information about it, it's exciting. We now know, in 1980, there were 20 cases, I believe, or so, of multiple personality disorder diagnosed in America. We didn't know what it was. I mean, there was Three Faces of Eve, which was a fluke. There was Sybil, which was a fluke. But we didn't know that it's a dissociative disorder is like one of the essential ways of looking at a mental health problem. I mean, dissociation is what mental health
Schizophrenia.
Well, yeah, it's really not even schizophrenia, though. Schizophrenia is a heightened awareness that's very different than what multiple personality disorder is. Oh. And it's now called dissociative identity disorder, thanks to the AMA or the APA and whatever. Not to obfuscate it, but they're just, or maybe to obfuscate it. You can't trust these doctors. You can't trust the AMA. You can't.
The psychiatric association.
You can't trust them. There are men in there and women who are good people, but basically they're worried about being sued. They're in it to make money, and frankly, the psychiatrists and psychologists, most of them, the ones I'm talking to, they don't know, even the best of them, they don't know how to treat this. They don't know what to do. They take the long way around. And so one of the things we're doing is we're putting together, after so many years now of looking at this and finally figuring out what it is, we're putting together a group of experts in a group called the Freedom of Thought Foundation, which, among other things, we want to provide help for people. And we're going to have to train psychiatrists and psychologists in how to deal with government mind control. And we went back to David after all these years, you know. And I said to David, how's it going? He said, well, I'm still only sleeping 2 hours a night. I'm still having nightmares. I said, what's your most frequent night? He said, it's the recurring one. He said, I see this man being mutilated. You know, his fingers are cut off piece by piece in front of his family, you know. And they're trying to get one of his family members to talk.
Oh, memories that are coming back.
And yeah, so he's remembering being this human tape recorder, witnessing this stuff. And it keeps him from sleeping. And all sorts of other things are a result of this. Well, I started asking him questions. I said, now your father, he wasn't raised with his father. He left when he was a small child. But his father was an alcoholic who used to beat the kids. Okay? Well, this is the basis of dissociation. Here's what David represents. David represents that part of the mind control spectrum, which he joined the Air Force, and they studied his Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Index forms. That MMPI shows multiple personality disorder very clearly. So they said, aha, we can use this guy, right? So they made him a hypnoprogram courier. That's not all he did. We don't know what all he did because he's very much recovered, but he's still suffering. And now we have the technology and understanding to really help these people.
Could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, well, it's basically the kind of thing that neurolinguistics programming uncovered. And neurolinguistics programming was really a toolbox of stolen from Milton Erickson, Virginia Satir, and various Gestalt, Fritz Perls, and a variety of other disciplines. And when you strip away all the technology from mind control, microwaves and magnetic waves, gravity waves, stuff, you end up with hypnosis. You end up with embedded commands, subliminals, stuff. So it's really basic, and it's really... people think that hypnosis is something, a big, you know, mysterious, you know, I'm going to go to sleep. And can you remember a time when you went to a Halloween party dressed in a costume? Can you?
No, not me, personally.
You never went to a Halloween party?
No.
Can you remember one of your birthday parties?
Yes.
All right. And you just looked up to the left, you see, when you remember that. Which means you're right-handed, and it also means that you're accessing your visual recall bank.
All right. My grandmother was at my left helping me to cut the cake.
All right. So now if you were going to direct a movie of this scene and recreate it, but have actors play your scene, how would you improve that scene? Improve it.
Improve it.
Improve the scene. Transderivational search. Your eyes just went from right to left at ear level, and then they went up, and you went left to right, up. So that's called a transderivational search. Okay, now, if I wanted to, during the time you were processing that question, I could have given you an embedded command about a dream you might have tonight. You know, and you would, and then I would ask you how the weather. Did it rain here yesterday? And then you'd start saying, did it rain? I don't, and then you wouldn't remember the embedded command. And then you'd probably have the dream. And that's how I would start to influence you. Without any integrity, you know.
Or wires.
You know, or wires, you know. But the same thing is true if you take ELF, extremely low frequency, different kinds of waves and rays that can be modulated, even microwaves. And of course, it'll cook your brain. Some of these things will really do destroy brain cells and what have you. But the guys were coming back when I was at in Operation Mind Control is a Strange History. We did 98 radio and television interviews in 33 cities in 30 days on the tour, and when it was put out, I think that's a world record. Yeah, I felt like I was in a rock and roll band without the band. You look out the window, you'd say, "Where the hell is this? It's raining out. It's miserable." At 5 o'clock in the morning, the phone rings, and it's some guy that says, "Oh, what a lovely day we're having," you know. And you say, "Where's this?" And the guy's calling from New Orleans. You don't know where you are by that time. So, but a guy called me on TV. I was on KPIX in San Francisco, and they were supposed to bus in a bunch of ladies. And the bus, you know, ladies' club for the book author of the day, the chef, you know, the standard ladies' morning. Format, the television format of 1978. And the bus broke down, so there was nobody in the audience, you know. So they opened the phone lines to San Francisco, which was fortuitous because I got this call and the director says, "Hey, I think we're in a break," and he says, "We got a commander from the Navy here that says he was part of an assassination team and he can't remember stuff. You want to talk to him on the air?" And I said, "Yeah, put him on." So on comes this commander, and he says, "I was part of a black pajama team that was working behind a fixed border. He called it a fixed border in Southeast Asia. And we were creating accidents that would cause the death of any prominent, any charismatic politician on the local level that was rising up in China." We found out later it was China. He didn't say that on the air, but later I said, was that China? He said, yes. And he said his team went, they all got back from their tour of duty. They did it for 6 years, I think he said. And they all got the flu, and they all went to Walter Reed Hospital, and, quote, they came out with cardboard memories. So what they were using was electronic dissolution of memory on those guys.
And radio hypnotic.
In other words, just erase the tape of your mind. Just erase it. Now, what are you going to do? You have psychological problems. It's like having amnesia. It's a serious, painful, gnawing. You're stumbling around in an alien world without any reference points, no memory. So then you have to put the memory back. So they show them slides. So they have a two-dimensional reality.
Slides of what?
Slide of grandpa and their life growing up as a kid, you know. Them and their dog at eight, you know. But they don't have any real tactile and kinesthetic memory. It's criminal. Yes, it is criminal. Also, the reason we know, like there's the, I call it the false memory syndrome foundation, you know. The reason we know that the psychiatric psychosciences are in such trouble is because when they're doing Elizabeth Loftus and others are talking about memory, they're talking about who can remember what and then how abuse victims, you can't rely on their memories. And they don't know the first thing about how memory works. This guy on television that sells for $39.95 a series of tapes by which you can improve your memory knows more about memory than Elizabeth Loftus and some of these other people, you know, because they don't know the fundamentals of the second signal system and how it works. They're, at least if they know it, they're not talking about it and they're not approaching. I mean, I just don't think that they have any solid basis. They go by studies and databases, and you know how statistics lie, you know. But they don't have the nuts and bolts by which they can operate this mechanism of the mind. And now there are people that do, and unfortunately, not too many of them are in the psychosciences. You know. But we're going to put together a group. We've got a workshop for psychiatrists and psychologists, and we're putting together some of the handlers, the people that were the mind controllers of the past generation, some of the people that worked on the project, so-called Project Monarch, that created presidential models, the people that worked in Project 100,000, that hypno-programmed 100,000 people. The handlers, we're putting the handlers together with the psychiatrists and the doctors to teach them the codes, cues, and triggers for the different kinds of mind control. There, the SEAL teams,
the Navy
SEAL teams, also the what's the other team? Where's NOS insignias? The ones that went to Waco.
ATF.
No, not ATF. They were just black pajamas. It's in the book. I don't want to look. But these guys are hypno-programmed. And the programming is not that perfect. I mean, it's like getting a military education, you know, is not a very great education because, you know, by the time it's got so watered down to the lowest common denominator, you know, like Juliana McKinney is in Washington at the, what's it called, the Electronic Harassment Project of the National Security Alumni Association. And she said that she learned NLP in the Army as an Army spy, you know, Army intelligence agent. She learned neurolinguistics programming, but she can't use it. I said, why not? She says, well, you know how the government education is, you know. It's just not any good. It's like the lowest common denominator. You know, it's watered down. People that taught the people that taught the people that taught the people that taught the people are teaching us, you know. And it's she says, I can't use it. You know, I never got it. I never understood. But it would be it's an important tool for all of us. I think it's got to become part of our educational system. And it's a great way to for self-defense.
Yeah, the compartmentalization and need-to-know basis of what degrades the quality of the research.
Well, also the authoritarian pyramid, linear chain of command kind of organization is not very creative. Second signal system reinforcement is everything. A baby's laying in the crib, and it's got, let's imagine you got an orange Nerf ball hanging over its head. You trademark Nerf ball. The baby's instinct is to reach up and touch this soft, warm, furry, orange ball. And when it touches it, at first it just sees this orange, whatever it is. But when it touches it, it understands that it's not cold, it's not too hot, it's not menacing, it's orange, warm, furry, and it understands and it remembers what the Nerf ball is. So then you'll see the baby slap it and laugh and start interacting with the Nerf ball or whatever. But until that time, it's just curiosity makes it reach out and touch it. So you'll see a kid likewise when it's just beginning to walk. It'll stick. Imagine you got a glowing pot-bellied stove across the room. And the kid walks up, and if you don't stop it, he'll put his hand on that cherry red stove. It'll do it once. That's aversive reaction. I mean, aversive therapy. Ouch, burn, no more. Now you move away from the stove. But life is an adjustment between the urge toward eureka, and actually that's the pleasure center. When you discover the wow, that's the pleasure center stimulus. And I think it's the most powerful motivational force in human nature. Not sex, as Freud said, or not survival, as Darwin said. I think the eureka is what has made man come to this stage. You know, and I hope we continue. Unfortunately, we run up against the National Security Act, the National Security Curtain, and that's what's keeping the eurekas secret. All of our problems of society today, looks to me like, can be tracked right straight to the National Security Act. But that's another subject.
Are you aware of any attempts to suppress your book?
Well, I haven't been able to prove any. I got a lawyer for a while, and it seems just common sense. I can put together a pretty good argument. And in the beginning of the book, in the preface, I mentioned I got a lot of death threats. The book was taken off the shelf by Dell. Another book that was very harmless. The difference. It was based on the CIA documents that were released in the Freedom of Information Act. But mine wasn't. Mine was based on the research that I did, talking to people. And then I just used the documents to underline and prove the case. But this other book was mainly only the documents and handed out the way the CIA handed them out. And that was taken by Dell and replaced mine. And it's still on, and it's still in their list.
What Dell, is the name? What? How
Dell was John Marks, the Manchurian Candidate. Oh. And it's still in their list now. And I understand Marx has quit doing the research. I mean, he's on to something else. I don't know what he's doing. But I think that was disinformation. I mean, it didn't tell untruths, told the truth. But the main difference was I said this is operational. And he said it's just experiments. We didn't come up with anything. We spent all this money. Oh, how silly. You know, and I said this is the most important thing since the atom bomb. You know, this is the Dianda. I love Dianda Prima's poem Rant. You know, the only war there is the war against the imagination. The only war there is the war against the imagination, and all other wars are subsumed by it.
And what is the brain bomb that I've heard or read about?
A brain bomb, yes. Well, it's probably something like the neutron bomb, you know, except it doesn't kill the people. It just erases the tape, you know. Just erase, it leaves you stumbling around. And how about that? Can you imagine? I can see a science fiction
like
film.
Ed
now.
Muskie, remember like, the Ed Muskie?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. There's a number of things that can do that. Number of different things. Ed Muskie, they were. Remember George Romney said, I was brainwashed. Jack Ruby said, I was brainwashed. You know, just listen to what people say. Yesterday at this Brain Mind Symposium here in, what's the name of this hotel? The Continental Hotel in, near LAX. There were 100 people there. And I asked them, how many of you have been brainwashed? And every one of them raised their hand. I said, how many of you have been mind controlled? About 10% raised their hand. I said, how many of you cannot, absolutely cannot. How many of you believe that you cannot be made to change your mind, change your belief, against your knowledge and without your consent? Only one person raised their hand.
Oof.
So it gives you an idea of what people are experiencing. And then I ask them questions about their government, how they felt about it. And I'm telling you, it's a cynical time. Now, this might not be a... these are people that got up out of bed and came down here to hear me talk, you know. So it's a different... And thank you guys for mentioning it on the radio. Several of them came up to me and said, I heard about you on the radio and I came down. You know? So appreciate it. But it was an interesting audience. It's people that are concerned now. And I think there's a groundswell rising. And one part of this is the thing I talked about mostly was... the abolition of the National Security Act. We've got to. God bless Hazel O'Leary. You know, Department of Energy used to be called the Atomic Energy Commission. You know, now it's the Department of Energy. She releases 33 million documents, right? And you know, God bless her. But there's still that's 3 miles high pile of documents.
Is that mostly what came out recently on the radiation
on
unsuspecting?
Well, yeah, but they're still doing it. I mean, it's 3 miles high pile of papers, and they haven't got to the since it's been a month or so now. They're not finished Xeroxing yet the first set, you know. But there's 33 million documents left that they haven't released, and I don't consider the Department of Energy part of the cryptocracy. Really, I mean, it's sort of you know. And she says, I have looked into the faces and eyes of people doing battle with their government. And she's going to have to look in a lot more faces and eyes, and we're going to have to look into not only the Secretary of the Department of Energy, but the Secretary of the Health, Education, and Welfare, the Veterans Administration, and on and on and on, as well as the entire National Security Establishment, CIA, DIA, NSA, on and on and on.
All
we don't need that.
We
don't need that. I approached Tom Bearden yesterday, and I said, we're going to abolish the National Security Act. And he sort of lurched backward, and I said, he said, well, we need some. There's some secrets we got to keep. And I said, you mean military secrets? He says, yes. I said, well, the military can do that. You don't need this National Security Act. He says, well, you're right. And I said, then you're going to join us? He says, oh, yes. Yes, I'll join you. We'll abolish the National Security Act. And Fletcher Prouty has joined us on the Freedom of Thought Foundation. He said, Harry S. Truman said that the worst thing he ever did was to sign the National Security Act. And he said it created the CIA and the NSA. He said the CIA is nothing but a war-making body. You know, it's manipulating our government. It's manipulating our society. I saw a bunch journalists talking. What's wrong with journalism? The American people wants us to do something about democracy. We can't save democracy. We can barely save journalism, they say. They said the American public doesn't believe in us as journalists anymore. They don't believe in our... We're slimy as lawyers, in effect. And the reason is because they're not talking about anything relevant. All the secrets are behind the national security curtain. Let's talk about fusion. Let's talk about solving the energy problem. The technology already exists and has for years. We don't need a fossil fuel economy. It's over. The cat's out of the bag. Those of us that are readers and researchers know this. I personally was told by one of the top people at the Mellon Bank years ago, we're going to trim the fat from this economy. A guy named Addison A. Vestal, who was the tax man for the Mellon family, said, we're going to trim the fat from this economy, 1968. We're going to create the oil crisis. Our partners in Kuwait, you know, we funded the royal family in Kuwait. They were just a bunch of naked Bedouins out there, you know. And he tells me the whole story of what has happened in the last 20 years. And, of course, at the time I said, this can't be. You know, I don't believe this. You know, but it happened. So now I know there's a conspiracy against the future. And he told me, he said, I was into Buckminster Fuller a lot and reading about the world resources inventory and stuff. And I said, then we'll... this fossil fuel economy, isn't it kind of the day's number? And he says, well, yeah, but we're going to pump every drop of oil out of the ground at top dollar before we make the capital commitment to alternatives. You know. And I said, well, what were the alternatives? Solar? He says, well, the solar would be good, and wind. And he said, but the main thing is going to be fusion. And I said, well, fusion, they can't do that. They can't contain the plasma and all the other things. He says, you're right, cooling, the two problems are on the planet here are cooling the reactor once you start it, and containing that ball of plasma. He said, well, we solved that. And I said, how? He says, we have a company called General Atomics, and it's owned half by Gulf and half by Westinghouse, and we're putting it in orbit, the plasma, and so it's gravity-less, and it sits there, and then you just vent it out in space, you cool it, and it, and then you beam the electricity back to Nevada or wherever, microwave, and distribute it. And that was in 1968. Well, they had the windfall profits tax then. Remember? When the oil crisis. Well, then they took General Atomics, which was nothing more than a paper shell with some patents, I suppose, and they bellied it up and they took a $5 billion write-off. So that's the way the game is played by the international corporations. And it's the New World Order, folks. That's what it is.
Well, tell us, Walter, generally, what are the objectives of mind control?
To cover the secrets of the slaves that buried the pharaoh, so to speak. It's the same. The objectives of mind control are to create a psycho-civilized society, according to
Delgado.
Delgado, Yale professor, CIA-funded Jose Delgado.
Office of Naval Research.
Yeah, in other words, we can have a bunch of... Well, we don't need the robots anymore, you know. They really don't know what they're doing. If you take the meta view of this thing, you realize that when... that any new technology envelops the old technology, and the old technology becomes obsolete, and therefore it becomes an art form. So as we've created the satellite technology... We've surrounded the Earth by this very fragile, delicate, it's going to become like a spider web of technology, satellite technology, surrounding the Earth. And that's the high ground. So, you know, in military strategy, whoever's got the high ground has the advantage. So we look back down the Earth is obsolete. So it's finally already occurred to the cryptocrats who we don't have the need to know. We're just so many rats in a maze to these guys in the present mindset of government. Right? And that's why more than half of the population in the United States has been experimented on in one form or another. So what they're doing, they're going to do, and this is the problem we've got to face, and this is the purpose of the mind control, this is where mind control fits in, is they're going to engineer the planet Earth. They're going to terraform planetary engineering. But when you have bureaucrats doing it, all you can have is grandfathered clauses, you know, that say, okay, you're a pygmy in Africa, right? That means you're naked, yeah, and, you know, you use blowguns or whatever, and you live in the bush. Now, if Jerry decides to sell TV sets to the pygmies, right, out of the sky, a laser beam will shoot and zap Jerry's cerebellum or something. And so or else he goes to jail for selling satellite dish to the pygmies because they cannot be allowed to exit their time space. They're in quarantine. They're in a time quarantine, right? So L.A. maybe will be the only creative space on Earth, you know, where anything goes. And it'll have a blackout over it, and anything goes, and you can think anything and do anything in L.A. Of course, it'll be total chaos, as it is already, you know. But this is creativity. Creativity is chaos, you know. And it's this wonderful interplay of chaos, not order. But otherwise, we're going to order the entire thing. And, you know, when you freedom, we've unfortunately for these guys in their way of thinking, our founding fathers granted us the inalienable right of freedom of speech. So they can't stop you from speaking, but if they can stop you from thinking or direct your thoughts, they can control what you say, and that's what it's all about.
In his recent book, The Controllers, subtitled Modern Myth, Mass Manipulation, and the New Hypothesis of Alien Abductions, Martin Cannon says the image of an alien from a UFO provides an effective cover story to disguise the faces of the real abductors, namely psychiatrists, cryptocrats, and other operatives of the national security state in Halloween masks, so to speak. The experiment being done by the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, Naval Intelligence, CIA, universities, etc., in such areas as electronic stimulation of the brain, hypnotic resistance to torture, microwave induction of intracerebral voices, and electronic dissolution of memory, need victims. And how better to evade responsibility for these crimes than to blame them on aliens? Could you comment on that?
Well, I'd say well put, Martin Cannon. I mean, well done. I really want to see these higher and more advanced beings that are millions of years more evolved than us come here and help us out, because I think we need help. I think the human race is in a big mess. But unfortunately, it looks like Martin Cannon is right. It took me a couple of years to come to terms with that, or at least he's partially right. I don't think he's explained the entire UFO thing by his thesis. I think the book is worth reading, The Controllers. But I've since done my own research and found out that there is much more to Cannon's thesis than even Cannon knew about. And because now we have a number of the monarch victims and other survivors of mind control, the government mind control, who are telling us that as children 15 or 20 years ago, they were inside of a gray costume, so to speak, an articulated costume, very advanced for its day. And they were played a role in pulling off a fake abduction scenario for somebody that was under influence of drugs. The first story I heard was they'd given this guy sodium amytal, and there he is, sort of floating in and out of the Twilight Zone, and they're making him believe that he's been abducted. But recently, one of these handlers says it's done with stun guns. It's done with high-voltage electricity. And he said, if you'll get me a volunteer at one of these workshops, that one of the things we want to put together, you're going to have to sign all the whoever the volunteer is going to have to pardon us from any liabilities. But he's going to induce an alien abduction experience with this high-voltage electricity zap, you know, and amnesia as well, you know, and a post-implanted command. Just like, and he's going to do it just like the aliens scenario is. So the cattle mutilations and all of that, they're called screens and scrambles. I'm working with a psychologist now who does not wish to be named because it's such a controversial area of research, and the psychiatric and psychological community is so highly political and so involved with so much big money and so corrupt that she says, I don't want people to know who I am right now. But she's doing a lot of research. And she's made a graph and cross-correlated the different ritual abuse phenomena, the random abuse phenomenon, alien abduction phenomenon, and mind control phenomena. And it's really all the same. You know, it follows a pattern. It's all the same. And so that's what makes us believe that we know also from the testimony of people that are recovering from this mind control stuff, that it's not someone 30 years, you know, 30, 35 years. They're just now beginning to remember what they did. And some of the things, they were from multiple generational incest families, a lot of them women, 70, 80%. And of course, because of the anatomy and physiology of females, sex can be a very traumatic experience. And especially the abuse, sexual abuse at an early age in
yes,
a child.
I'd like to ask you about that subject, especially in regard to the Franklin cover-up.
Yes. Some of these people are the ones that I'm talking about. Even Paul Benassi was...
Right.
He was one of the informants. And he describes, it's not widely known, but he describes an alien situation. He calls it alien programming.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, do you think that the efforts to discredit the returning memories of these victims is an attempt by the psychiatrists to protect this method of mind control?
Yeah, well, I think they're trying to.
I mean, this is what they call false memory.
Yeah, spindrome is what I call it. Well, it's not a syndrome. It's not scientifically a syndrome. They're very rigid. There's a definition to the word syndrome, and the thing that's being described as the false memory syndrome doesn't fit the definition. It's not a syndrome. So I call it a spindrome. I think the false memory phenomenon is a lot of hot air. I mean, it's not only a lot of hot air. I think it's a deliberate. Martin T. Oren, and a couple of other MK Ultra psychiatrists are on that board of the false memory syndrome foundation.
Well, Peter Breggin says that these psychiatrists get around in groups and they make up these phrases, you know,
yes,
like attention deficit disorder.
Yeah, that's right.
They're just pure.
That's right. I talked to Colin Ross, who's probably the leading man on multiple personality disorder, you know, president of blah, 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 and all that stuff. He's a Canadian. And he's trying to live down Cameron's work. And I said to him, Colin, you know, the psychiatrists are the ones that created this whole mind control mess. He made the statement that military or government mind control is going to keep psychiatry alive for the next 10 years. Because people are, you know, this is obsolete now, the way they did it now. They're turning these people loose. They're not killing them. They used to kill them, and these kind of spies, you know. Now they're just turning them loose, and you got armies of zombies walking around, people with no memories and scrambled memories and all kinds of psychological problems, traumatized, dissociated, multiple personality disorder. But there's a difference between a random person that's just been abused by some drunk father, say, and a military, somebody that's been taken as a child, as an MPD child, and then developed and disciplined. And then there's also a difference in the alien. The alien abductee is very passive. It's like their soul has been pacified. You know, and the regular abuse victim is out, is angry, has got a tremendous amount of anger. So it's very interesting to see the difference. But they all describe the same thing. You know, they say, you go down the chart, you can't believe the similarities in set and setting and, you know, animate and inanimate objects and that they've described. Spychiatrist. Look, the technology that we have now discovered, the electronics, you know, the stun gun techniques, the thing I call it neurolinguistics programming, which was partly a CIA, a result of a CIA effort, all this information, it's now leaking out into the public. Conceivably, Delta Force was the name I was looking for before, the guys in the black pajamas, their hypnoprogram. Conceivably, you could take the Delta Force guys and find out their codes, cues, and triggers and turn them around against their commanding officers. You see what I mean? So what can be done can be undone. Yeah, anything that can mind control, anybody that knows the codes, cues, and triggers can take over from the handler. You know, and turn the thing around.
Bringing back people's memories seems to be a more difficult problem.
Well, it's not. It's not just the memories. It's like the trauma comes with the memories. But there are ways now to treat that. That psychiatry has got to learn. Like psychiatry cannot cure a phobia, but I can cure a phobia in 10 minutes. You know.
Could you be more specific on that?
Well, neurolinguistics programming can cure a phobia in 10 minutes.
And but the memories?
You dissociate from the memories, and you look at the memory like a movie screen, and there's a technique involved, and you look at it over and over again until you're bored with it, right? And then you go on, and you're free of it. So your phobia is gone. Well, a lot of the fear is what's being used here. Fear motivates people. Fear is trauma, you know, and trauma creates phobias. I saw my teacher get 5 people who couldn't wash their face because they'd almost drowned. You know, had a phobia of water. They used Noxzema. They were great. They consumed great quantities of face creams and stuff, and. He got them to swim within 15 minutes. And one lady is the kind of person, I know another person is this way too, their bones are so heavy that they sink, they don't float. She dove in and sank to the bottom of the pool and was swimming, doing the frog kicks, and swung up to the shallow end and stood up and said, "Wow, I can swim," you know. And she was cured forever, you know, of her phobia. Now she can wash her face and take a shower and what have you. But all phobias can be cured, but I don't think psychiatry knows this. I mean, the general run-of-the-mill psychiatrist doesn't know how to do this.
Well, they're into pharmaceuticals.
And they're into giving, they're into suppressing, giving drugs and suppressing the symptoms. You know?
Dr. Bob Beck has utilized psychoelectronic techniques, employing a device called the brain tuner to help people off heroin and other addictions. What can you tell us about some of the positive uses of these techniques?
Well, all of it. Every one of these mind control techniques have been used to enslave people. Really, some of the electronic realm of it is new, but all of it is as old as mankind. The use of sound and color and lights and mantra and mudra and all that, you know, the Sufi meditation things, those are very positive things, and they use the same technology that is being used to enslave people. So, any of this can be turned around, and Bob is doing some great work. He's worked for the government, and he's probably feeling a little guilty about some of the things that he's done, the way they've been put to use. I would think that the psychiatric community, Colin Ross said to me, I said, virtually every doctor in the psychiatric community of a certain generation worked for Operation Mind, Project Mind Control. He says, "You're absolutely right. And I said, "Then that means you guys got a lot of work to do to clean it up. You made the mess. Now you got to clean it up." And he said, "You're absolutely right."
Thanks, Walter. We'll return in a moment. Welcome back to Contemporary Communications Conference, Walter. The two-time Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Robert Becker, writes in his 1990 book, Cross Currents, that since the mid-1970s, Dr. Jose Delgado, Spanish neurophysiologist, shifted his interest from direct electrical stimulation of the brain to the use of electromagnetic fields to produce fear, anxiety, and rage in humans by exciting specific areas of the brain. This work was not published in any scientific journals, but it was covered in Omni Magazine's February 85 issue. In the Congressional Record, number 26, volume 118 of February 24th, 1974, Delgado states, and I quote, "We need a program of psychosurgery for political control of our society. The purpose is physical control of the mind," which was the title of his book, incidentally. "Everyone who deviates from the given norm can be surgically mutilated. Man does not have the right to develop his own mind. Someday armies and generals will be controlled by electronic stimulation of the brain," unquote. Since you cover Delgado in your book, have you updated your research on him?
Well, Delgado retired, as you know. He did that, and that's what he did, and he retired. Others took over from where he left off. And I think some of the work, the side tributaries of his work are very, very interesting. Delgado, I think of him as the epitome of the mad scientist, you know.
Yeah.
And anybody that could buy that is got to be nuts. I mean, they're not an American. This guy's not an American. He's back in Spain, you know. And I think he functions very well under a monarchy, you know, because he thinks like a dictator. Anybody that suggests a psycho-civilized society is... We have the technology today with mind control, the beneficial use, the humane results, the application, the influencing with integrity is what it's all about. It's got to be. We have the ability to rehabilitate prisoners, criminals of all kinds, and turn them into productive people. We're into punishment instead. We have a political problem in this country. This society is sick from the top down, and this is what's coming out in the testimony of these victims, survivors of mind control. Some of the asides of Delgado are the Russians picked up. You know where? I mean, we messed around with monkeys. You know, and sticking needles in the monkeys' brains. The Soviets stuck the needles in the humans' brains, and they were trying to cure this woman of Parkinson's disease, and they found her orgasm center. And of course, every time they stimulated it, she got an orgasm, so she'd have thousands of orgasms a day, and she fell in love with the guy that held the button and followed him around, you know. Then they stuck another needle in another part of the brain, and they hit her pleasure center. And it turned out that she lost interest in the guy with the first button and started following around the guy with the second button. And you can't do this with a monkey. You can't ask a monkey what does it feel like, but you can ask a human being. And they ask this lady, what's the pleasure center? What's that mean? What's it feel like, the pleasure center? She said, it's like learning. It's discovery. It's like, wow.
Well, they use the needles through the skull here, too, right? I mean, yeah. John Lilly did the needles through the skull.
Yeah, but monkeys. We didn't do humans. You know,
Excuse me.
We did animals.
It was only animals.
Animals, you know. And
have they since done any on humans?
Done some Parkinson's stuff on humans, electrostim. But it's not predictable, and they haven't got it down to a fine science. I had people calling me, saying, this one particular gentleman, a writer, called and said his wife had Parkinson's, and he really wanted to find out what that research was all about. And he checked into it, and it wasn't. It was pretty rough and crude stuff with unpredictable. The results weren't as controllable and predictable. And they weren't sure of the side effects and the damage that would go, you know, because it's sort of like, again, the magnetic tape metaphor when you put a field. But the magnetic fields, you don't have to influence. It's almost like kahuna, you know, healing. You don't have to stick a needle into the brain. You can just manipulate the field outside and affect the patterns of thought. So it's like, you know, EMR or something, electronic magnetic resonance. And there's
ESB.
Yeah, well, that's electronic stimulation in the brain. That's direct needles into the brain.
Oh, oh, oh.
But if you just manipulate the magnetic field outside, if you put a big magnetic field, you'll have behavioral effects. And this is part
Dr.
of the,
Beck talks
this
about
is part of the mag, this is part of the mental telepathy system that's, that people are suffering from.
When Jim Jones moved his People's Temple to Ukiah, California in 1965, the group immediately infiltrated the Mendocino State Mental Hospital, which would provide not only test persons, or TPs as the Nazis called them, for his preliminary experiments, but also a training ground for the many medical technicians he needed for the final experiment. Soon, every employee of the hospital was a member of the People's Temple. California virtually gave the hospital to Jim Jones, and when the patients were released from it, they were released into the charge of the People's Temple. Since the publication of the book Was Jonestown a CIA Medical Experiment by Michael Myers in 1988, has any new information come to your attention that would enlighten us as to the real purposes of the Jonestown operation?
Well, I haven't read Myers' book, as I told you. I look forward to doing that. I think it's a good premise. There's enough, but what I have read about Jonestown, and some of the people that I've read have referred to Myers' book, there's indication that it was a CIA experiment. And for what purpose? It's a multi-purpose. I know more about Waco through the Paul Wilshire letter to Janet Reno. The CIA is very interested in cults and using cults. You can manipulate people's belief systems. If you can find out what a man believes and then his syntax, in other words, anything that you do, any expertise that you've got, how you do that. Let's say you're a great golfer. What do you believe about golfing? You know, you believe, well, if the grass is growing the wrong way, I'm going to have a hard time. Well, that's a belief you want to change, you know. So if you can find out what a person believes that's successful and duplicate the belief, adapt the belief to your own. And then what do you see, hear, feel, in which order in the process of doing the task? You can duplicate the results, right? So when you get a group of people, especially with this, Anthony Robbins is a great teacher. He's a marvelous man, and he uses all the stuff that fundamentalist revivalist meetings use. Music, light, sound, you know, What was the Steve Martin film with what is the fundamentalist revivalist? What's the name of that film? A wonderful film. It shows the technology behind the revival meeting, singing, dancing, clapping. Say something, get a group of people saying something, chanting it over and over again, and then get them to anchor it in their physiology by dancing or clapping their hands together or something. It's very powerful. It's your using your the memory in your body to reinforce the information. So you can really change behaviors this way. So that's just part of the research that would go on with cults and groups. You know. Now, in Waco, according to Wilshire's letter, and according to the Delta Force guys that went in there and murdered some of these people, right? They had a problem of conscience because these were sitting ducks. These people were captive sitting ducks. They used neuro, according to Wilshire's letter. And now we know that Wilshire is dead. You know, he was hit by some electronic weapon, it looks like, that exploded his inner organs. It was found on the toilet, internal hemorrhage. And they took him to, took his organs to Walter Reed Hospital, which is where they take the microwave and other non-lethal weapons research victims. Right, Waco and Jonestown are two examples of CIA interference, and this is why we've got to abolish the National Security Act. This has got to stop. We've got the Nazis on our hands.
All Are the mass shootings at McDonald's in San Diego, the Stockton, California schoolyard, San Francisco Business Tower, and Long Island Railroad, just to mention a few, the work of mind control terrorists?
Yeah, you got to talk to a guy named Mike Knight up in Sacramento, I believe. He's a cop, former cop, and he's been investigating for a number of years this very question. And he has a lot of information that suggests that the tower sniper, remember what was the name of the tower guy?
Ferry.
Yeah, that he was, there's a lot of military intelligence and cryptocracy connection, mind control connection to a lot of these things. He got into the Son of Sam and the Zodiac murders too. And he says the pattern is unbelievable. He's worth an interview for you. Sometime.
Would you relate this to gun control in some way?
Yeah. Well, this is how it's being used. You know, I mean, you have enough nuts. The whole society is being engineered this way. I mean, programming. The word programming on television, it means programming. And the violence in England, you don't have violence on television. They don't show it. And then, of course, they don't allow guns there either. But you have sexual murders like Jack the Ripper. You have these weird, perverted, repressed guys going crazy off in the dark alleys of London. And you have these weird, strange sex crimes. But of course we're having in the bizarre manifestations recently. But we didn't used to. I think a lot of it's on television. There's a phenomenon called audiovisual desensitization. Going on when you have all this violence, murder, mayhem, and all the blood and guts and explosions, action, adventure on television and what have you, you end up with people that are desensitized to it. You know, and little kids are taking a gun and saying, "Oh, let me shoot them like on TV," and blowing people away. And of course, there's plenty of guns around. You know.
Well, that's a question I have about the Ludovico treatment, you know, in The Clockwork Orange.
Yes.
If they were desensitized, I mean, they were showing
yes.
him films of violence.
Yes.
But they weren't, were they desensitizing
yes.
him?
Yes.
In other words, to stop him from...
Well, they were, it was like the same thing a phobia cure would be, without propping your eyes open and forcing you to watch the film. You know, it wasn't quite right what they showed, but they showed it. They gave the general impression, okay, but it wasn't quite right. It was, you know. But they were trying to desensitize him to it.
The way you characterize Luis Castillo, Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan Sirhan, James Earl Ray, it suggests a unifying theory behind the idea of the quote lone nut assassin. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, I didn't say they were assassins. I said they're patsies, most of them. And this is the cover story. Usually there's a shooter on all the assassinations. They're highly trained professional military marksmen. And, or several of them in some cases. And then the rest of them are just throwaways. Now, we don't know if that's true of Luis Angel Castillo or not, because there was no assassination, no crime. But, with Sirhan, it's pretty obvious now, time gone by, that somebody else shot him from behind, and that Sirhan was just randomly shooting, like, and he was hypnoprogrammed.
With blanks?
It could have been blanks, or it could have been actual bullets, but he was hypnoprogrammed. And you know, he said mind control, mind control, mind control in his diary. He could write, which also, by the way, now, you know, it indicates he had three personalities there. Each one was answering. So he kept saying things in threes, you know. He'd write them down in three times. Nobody probed that. Nobody really resolved Sirhan. He's still in prison up there with a scrambled brain, you know.
So the only one we know who actually killed somebody was Mark David Chapman.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So since Fenton Bresler's book, Who Killed John Lennon, came out in 1989.
Yes. Good book.
Has any new information come out on Chapman?
I don't know. I haven't studied the Chapman case at all.
Because they keep bringing him back on TV. Barbara Walters interviewed him.
Is that right?
I don't know, 6 months ago or so. And she even asked him directly, you know, were you controlled? And He said no, which of course can mean nothing, I suppose. But
yeah, well, yes. Can you be made to do something against your will and without your knowledge? Most people will tell you no.
But the answer is yes.
Of course it is. And the easiest person to hypnotize is the person that says, I can't be hypnotized, because the hypnotist never tells you, yes, you can. They say, of course you can't be hypnotized. And they establish a rapport, and that's the entry into hypnosis.
Well, this question may not be properly exactly on mind control, but I'm very interested because in the beginning of your book, you talk about Daniel Ellsberg. You say that he broke free from the chains of command when he leaked the Pentagon Papers. Do you still believe that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe so, maybe not. Maybe he leaked them on purpose.
Well, did you read Silent Coup by Kalodny and Getlin?
No.
The theory is that you know, this was a military operation to destabilize Nixon. And
yes, could have been.
I think
could have been
it is
now.
Possible.
Sure, it's possible. You bet.
Okay.
Yeah. But Ellsberg was a good example. I was trying to encourage whistleblowers. I think it's happening now very much more. Yeah, but also he might have done it for his own motives and didn't realize how it served others. Sometimes myself, I think, you know, I'm saying, who gave me this information? How did this information come to me? You know? Is this a leak? I'm always struggling with it. But you can get off in a paranoid dimension that way, where you never do anything if you don't just play it by your guts. So a guy like Ellsberg was probably doing it for the right motives on the surface of it. I don't think he was a witting dupe.
Well,
it's like Timothy Leary was a witting accomplice with cryptocracy and his.
Well, if you're witting, you're not a dupe, right? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, if you're witting, yeah. So if you're unwitting, I mean, you have a motive to do the right thing, but you're being used by the other guys that are feeding you. That's another question. I don't know the answer to that one about Ellsberg. And I haven't read the book, so maybe you'll send it to me.
Sure.
Because I'd like to see it.
In June 1980, issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin, there's an article entitled Mind Control, the Story of Mankind Research.
Yes.
You know
this? Yes.
In which Weberman states that Christopher Byrd worked for the CIA and specialized in psychological warfare.
Uh-huh.
And Peter Tompkins is an OSS, ex-OSS agent.
Uh-huh.
Are the books authored by Byrd and Tompkins, Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain, and The Secret Life with Plants, some kind of a CIA disinformation?
Well, that's an interesting question, because it's almost like the when you look at, again, the meta view of this kind of thing, including the alien phenomena, alien abduction phenomena, you find out that for every yes, there's a no. You know, for every guy that says, J.B. Ryan's research in Duke University in the 50s was CIA-funded. And it got positive results. I would bet it's 65% positive telepathic results. The average man, 65% of the time. Telepathy, reliable telepathic results can be induced in an average man 65% of the time. Well, do you know that information? Have you seen that information? It's covered up. You know, they debunked, they said, we wasted all this money on Duke University. CIA funded the research. Right? And there are a whole lot of people that are victims of mind control that were hypno-program presidential models that were recruited from the Duke University parapsychology experiments. They were volunteers for parapsychology. And then they ended up being sex slaves and couriers and drug mules working under, you know, with these, now 30 years later they're remembering. So for every yes, there's a no. I was taken by a man in England named David Bearglass. I was on the BBC. And he says, Dr. Sargent is talking. You've got to come to the Royal Academy with us to hear this. And I thought it was William Sargent, the guy that wrote The Battle for Men's Minds, but it was another guy, a younger guy, at Cambridge, who was doing a telepathy experiment
in which white sound was put into the ears of the receiver, and ping pong balls that were stimulated like you know, you see like a blind person, just white light. And it's the same thing as a peyote ceremony. The drum and the fire keeps your senses occupied. And in the other room, in the other building, are random 50 envelopes with torn out photos from Life magazine or something. And you open one of them. You're the sender. You've all been tested. With the cards, you show no measurable ability of the ESP, neither the sender nor the receiver. And you go into this room, and you're the sender, and you open the thing, and you get a picture of a ship or something. All right, and then you concentrate on the picture of the ship. 65% of the time, the guy that's the receiver with the ping-pong balls on his eyes and the white sound in his ears will draw a picture of a ship or whatever it is you're sending. There's a match 65% of the time. I saw this paper presented, and I was taken there by this man named David Bearglass, who is a mentalist. He's an expert in micro-muscle movement reading, and it's an uncanny ability that I guess we all can learn. It's like heightened sensory acuity. You know, and NLP teaches you some, neuro-linguistics programming teaches you some of these things. But this guy had it developed to an nth degree. He was like the amazing Randy, you know, who's the CIA version of David Bearglass. So Bearglass kept us out till 4 in the morning, and we had a great time having dinner. And Omni Magazine was the host of this affair, and I got to talk a lot with Sargent, and I was really impressed with what he was doing. And on the way home, this guy, Bearglass, kept getting up to make a phone call. And I said, "Where are you going, Dave?" He says, "My 40th wedding anniversary. I have to call my wife." And finally we go home, and he's taking me back to the hotel in his big Pontiac American car in these narrow British streets. And it suddenly registers, this is something weird. So we got to the hotel, and I said, "David, how long have you been working for MI6? He said, "Oh, about 20 years, you know." So, and he was the debunker of Sargent. And I went with this guy and heard this great presentation about telepathy. Then this Bearglass guy and two other guys get up, and they just rake this guy over the coal. They were nasty and venomous and called him a fraud. It's doctor. And then everybody's polite afterwards. And it's very strange. So for every yes, there's a no. And it's almost like the UFO phenomenon. Can you handle it? What if we are in contact with an alien culture? All right, that's millions of years more advanced. Goodbye, religion. We're not going to believe in science anymore, not the science we've got. We're not going to believe in our government anymore because they don't know anything. Right? There goes civilization. We're going to all end up like a bunch of aborigines or a bunch of, you know, the same phenomena that happened to any other culture that encounters an advanced civilization. We're going to lose all.
Could they be that advanced and still have malevolent purposes?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. What do you think? I think it's a 50-50 chance under any circumstance. Yes. Why couldn't they be? I mean, what's malevolent? The extinction, the annihilation of the genetic mutation, the forced intervention in genetic manipulation in the human race, and the extinction of the human race as we know it, could be a very beneficent
for the universe.
Thing for, you know, depends on your point of view, you know. Do you want to be the one? No. But are you going to give your genes for your country or what? For your planet, for your race, for your species.
It would help, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, but it's hard to think of in terms of, you know, you got a wife and kids and loved ones, and are you going to let them go to the gas chambers to save Germany or whatever? You know, I mean, of course not. The ends don't justify the means.
Oh, thank you.
You know, it's got to be that way. I mean, I kind of believe in. Something inside me says that the human spirit is good, and that we are, you know, the stuff of the universe. We are the atoms of created by whatever, you know, God or otherwise, or I don't know, the nameless, whatever.
Okay. Can you now reveal any of the names of the anonymous intelligence and military sources mentioned in your author's note and in Chapter 17 of Operation Mind Control?
Well, I don't remember. What was in Chapter 17? I don't remember exactly.
Uh-huh.
Was that the assassin? The assassin is dead. I could reveal his name. I'd have to go back and look it up. He died of cancer. And I'll tell you, some of the people I interviewed that didn't want to be identified that were living at the time was David Bruce and Abel Harriman. But there were a lot of others. One guy that's probably still alive is a high government military man, and he was still about to retire, and he was in intelligence, and he helped me a lot.
Is one of them John Grace, the man probably known as Valdemar Valerian?
No. I never talked to him.
Can you tell us something about the stuff you've learned since the writing of your book, The Future of...
Yeah, it's Operation Mind Control, as it was published by Dell in 1978, was just the tip of the iceberg. It was sort of a probe of what was going on. We covered the whole spectrum, and I'm quite amazed. I'm just a reporter. I'm just a writer. And I'm quite amazed. Since I've gotten immense education, I've been certified in neurolinguistics programming and other things, and then become a lie detector operator, psychological stress evaluator. And it's become a whole study for me. But I was just reporting what I heard. And of course it was all right 17 years later everybody's tried to tear it down. You know, I was on all these radio shows and television shows and they sandbag you, where they try to nitpick you and trap you and trick you. And one guy was one of the sociologists that did the study, one of the studies for the CIA. He was the host of the Radio Free America show in Chicago. Rosenbaum was his name. And after the end, he says, well, I was the guy that did the experiment on this submarine. You know, I'm sorry I had to sandbag you that way, you know. And he felt guilty about it because it was a low, cheap shot, you know.
Did you ask him why he was doing that?
Oh, it's quite obvious. He had been told to do that. He said, you understand why I had to do that? And I said, yeah, it's your job. You know, well, that's his job. But Radio Free America is a propaganda organ of the CIA, you know. And the news, of course, all of our news in this country is by admission of the CIA director.
Richard Helms?
No, the one who just testified before the Senate when they said they wanted him to liberalize.
Wilson, the more
freedom, you know. Gates. He was then the director, the interim director. He released the memo. You know, first the Congress asked him to see ways that they could loosen up and get rid of some of these secrets. So he came back with a 100-page report that was classified for Congress. They couldn't show it to Congress. The Congress insisted. It really made a stink. So then he released the report. And the report says that every radio, television, newspaper in the country has a CIA asset on it. Okay? So our news is manipulated and controlled.
Right. We know that from the dispatch document that was about how to counter criticism of the Warren Commission report.
Oh, really?
It was put out.
Great.
Yeah, I got a...
That's wonderful.
That from Mark Lane.
Really? You should read that.
I don't have it. I didn't bring it.
Oh. And, yeah. Well, it's definitely controlled. But there's hope. Every disaster is a blessing in disguise. When information travels at the speed of light, there's no secrecy. You can't control this stuff. So the cryptocracy's days are numbered. The clipper chip didn't work. They're going to try something else. They'll keep trying something. They'll get something that they have a back door that they can read your mail and eavesdrop on your computer communication, listen to your telephones. But it won't matter because some other hacker will invent a a guy named Carl, what was his name? Up in, he had a company called Cryptext. He was Carl Nicolai up in Oregon, Washington. Cryptext. This was back in 80, maybe. A little $100 box, you put it on your computer, and it encodes everything. I mean, man, you're the only ones with the keys. God forbid you lose the key, you know, you never get it back.
Like a Clipper?
It was like better than the Clipper thing. $100, this little dinky thing. This guy's a genius. He started making it, selling for $100. The National Security Agency shut him down, put him into court for 8 years. Violation, restraint of trade, un-American activities. This has got to stop. And then they figured out, well, they were afraid this guy would sell it to the Arab countries or some, you know, some African nation or
which
whatever.
They did themselves with the INSLAW programming anyway.
Yeah, but here for billions of dollars, they have these big systems, and some guy like Nicolai invents this little $100 thing that totally upsets our apple cart. That is free enterprise. That's the spirit of America. That's what it's all about. That's why this country used to be great, because guys like Nicolai could do that. The Security Act comes in, and you know, it's an antitrust thing. It's a violation of our principles of business and the whole freedom, everything this country is all about. To be able to have a cryptocracy, the National Security Act must be repealed. Must be repealed. And these cryptocrats must be sent packing, and the criminals, when you're going to find out the criminal behavior. As soon as you repeal the National Security Act, all the secrets are going to come. Just like what happened in the Soviet Union with its collapse. We found out all the secrets of the KGB. We're going to find out all the secrets of this. These guys, of course, there'll be old Richard Helms in there destroying, burning files and the, you know, paper shredders going. And, of course, it's happening right now. Prouty says that there's the lights are burning over time in Langley. They're Xeroxing false, planting false files right now, just for freedom of information requests. So you can't depend upon the freedom of information system, because they plant false information in the files. All right, so you can't believe those documents. The MJ-12 document is a perfect example.
Well, the Pentagon paper is a good example.
Was it a false document? I don't know.
Trying to convince us that we could win in Vietnam.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, right. Yeah, yeah. But see, that's not like a technical manual. Not a technical manual.
Walter, what is the Freedom of Thought Foundation?
It's the purpose of it is to abolish the National Security Act, to give, to maybe perhaps explore the possibility, at least with lawyers and interested parties, to bring to the public forum, and discuss the possibility of amending the Constitution so that freedom of thought is an inalienable right. Our founding fathers couldn't conceive of a time when voices could be implanted in your brain, nor could they conceive of subliminal commands in the elevators in department stores. And I think we ought to be free of that stuff. I think we should be free, to be free from microwave radiation, electromagnetic frequencies of all kinds that affect human thought processes. And that we should be able to have a system by which we can prosecute perpetrators of mind control, be they public or private. We have the military now recruiting multiple personality disorders from satanic cults. And creating cults and supporting satanic cults to create multiple personality disorder people. So it's a vicious circle. And it's got to stop. We've got to repeal, just like we repealed the Volstead Act when we had Prohibition. You know, Prohibition created the mafia and organized crime and was the first corruption of America. What the government denies, free enterprise supplies. It's inevitable. It's part of human nature. This is a country of mavericks, and it always will be, unless you want to put all of us on the streets as hollow zombies with no souls, you know. And, of course, if a handful of some secret elite is going to do that to the population, there's no way that they're going to escape it either. So, like I said, with the Delta Force guys, you could find their codes, cues, and triggers and turn them around on their commanders. So what goes around comes around, as they say. And the Freedom of Thought Foundation is a young fledgling organization that's we're going to raise $155 million and go to Washington and repeal the National Security Act. And also we're going to get AIDS. We're going to do all the things I've been talking about on this. Today we're going to try to educate the psychiatric community about what's wrong and what needs to be done and give them the real tools to clean up this mess that the psychiatric community in cahoots with the cryptocracy created, a psycho-civilized society.
When will Operation Mind Control be re-released, and what will the new information be?
The first edition of 500 copies only will be released. It's called the Flatland Edition, will be released August 15th. It contains a lot of information. It sort of explains what the first book was about. It contains all of that information updated that was in the first book, but it also has a second volume to it. It's more than twice the size of the first edition, and it's got more testimony from witnesses. It's got more interviews and more fresh new material. And of course, then it shines the light of the present on the past, and I'm quite amazed at what I didn't know what I know now, but it was all the seeds of it were in the first volume. So it's quite amazing to look back 17 years and find out that the first person in the book was a multiple personality disorder, when I thought that would be diagnosed as schizophrenia and so forth, you know. But it goes to show you how much we've grown in our understanding of the human mind in 17 years. It's pretty amazing.
And the Monarch program is
the Monarch program is a very interesting thing. It had to do with a butterfly, and the early Monarch victims were tattooed, and there were two or three different levels of programming, and each kind of programming had its own set of codes, cues, and triggers. And the people that were tattooed with a monarch butterfly were a certain type of, usually presidential models, very attractive young women. Some of them sold into prostitution, coerced by mind control into prostitution, some sort of perverted form of prostitution to high government officials. Right? And then the tastes, bizarre sexual tastes would be cultivated of these high government officials. And then
fits in with the Franklin.
Well, that's how you would control the high government officials, yeah. The Franklin part was involved in Monarch. Benassi was a Monarch victim. He was one of them. And that case is still ongoing. That's a very much a live case. And that book is certainly, it was called the Lincoln Conspiracy, wasn't it?
No, the Franklin,
Cover-Up.
By John DeCamp. That was the time. Longtime senior senator of Nebraska.
That's right, and that book is worth reading.
Very much.
Absolutely.
If you had been a victim of MK Ultra, what plan of action would you have devised to protect yourself, if any?
Well, you wouldn't know you would have been a victim if you were a victim of MK Ultra. I mean, the ones you would know 30 years later, probably, like is happening. The Project Monarch people, it started when they were infants. Some of them came from 100-year families have been doing this for 100 years. And the CIA just accessed these children. They would take babies, infants, and dip them in cold water, the bottom half of them in cold water, ice water, and then the top half of them in scalding hot water. Right? And they would dissociate as infants, and they began to program these children this way and develop these different dissociated personalities that could then be used. And at a certain age, they would then sell them. This is still ongoing in this country. They would then sell them on a white slave market to the cryptocracy, who would use them as couriers to carry messages like behind. Because when you get into an NPD state, weird phenomena happen. Improved memory, enhanced memory, hyperamnesia, incredible memory abilities, great gifts come out of people who are tortured, you know. The dissociation produces very useful things. Sex slaves, drug mules, you know, spies, people who can remember, like human tape recorder type people. It's quite amazing. So it's very useful to the intelligence people. And they took these women, these attractive women, and they used them with all the presidents, and, you know, and even in the 60s, they're reporting that in the 60s they were even given injections of different kinds to protect them from diseases that sound like AIDS back in the 60s.
Do you think that was genetically engineered?
I do. Yes. And half the people of the United States have been experimented on in one form or another. 100,000 American soldiers were marched through the fallout at Trinity site, for example. 35,000 they admitted to MK Ultra, which was the tip of the iceberg. One project, another, the radiation people, I don't know how many that was, but that was an industry of 156,000, on and on. But the largest number was the swine flu dress rehearsal.
In Cuba?
No, here in the United States, we had a swine flu. When Ford was president, we had the swine flu inoculation, you know.
Well, there was
no swine flu coming. The swine flu was an engineered thing. And swine flu wasn't coming. But 50% of the population got up and got the shots. Now, we were the only country that had the chicken eggs, incubator racks, injection guns or needles, doctors, nurses, and communication system to do a quick emergency, you know, civil defense drill in germ warfare was what that was. But it's still using you against your knowledge and without your consent as a guinea pig to see if they could get 50% of you to go take the swine flu shots, which 50% of you did. Now they can analyze your blood and to see which of you you are to find out who are the suggestible ones in our population.
So I feel this may relate to martial law even.
Well, the National Security Act is martial law. We've been living under martial law since 1947. All your civil rights can be suspended by the National Security Act. In the interest of national security, you don't get a fair trial. What's national security? There's no case law. Nobody knows. It's anything they say it is. The National Security Act must be repealed in order for us to regain our Bill of Rights.
In Christopher Simpson's recent book, Science of Coercion, he quotes from U.S. Army and National Security Council documents that define U.S. psychological warfare strategy as the clandestine targeting of the U.S. population as well as foreign countries for psychological operations. Is there anything we can do about this except to repeal the National Security Act?
Well, that's very true, what you just read. And there are elements. On one hand is John B. Alexander, who's promoting non-lethal weaponry, and he's selling it to local police forces. And a lot of the non-lethal, quote, non-lethal weapons will kill you. And the other, it depends on what setting you have it on, stun or kill, so to speak, you know. But it'll also fry your brain and produce permanent mental debilitation, some of it, you know. Definitely we've got to get this authoritarian trend under control in this country. And there's no reason to have a prison industry in this country when you have the technology to rehabilitate, take criminals. We have social engineers in this country. They're criminal. These guys are criminals. They're probably Nazis from Germany, probably second generation.
Well, we know that the paperclip operation
right.
Brought over
right.
a lot. How many would you suspect are still operating from that?
A doctor that works in a hospital, a clinical psychologist, said, when we tell the FBI about satanic ritual abuse, they don't pay any attention. But when we say that there are Nazis, that it's the skinhead Nazi doing the ritual abuse, they show up right away. because they know it's the fastest growing thing in America.
On behalf of Contemporary Communications Conference, we'd like to thank you, Walter.